FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. Today is March 29th, 2017. Well, you've seen gold prices pick up recently. You've seen the dollar kind of vacillate, go back and forth. Well, Bob Hoy is with us. Let's figure out what's going on. Bob, welcome back.
Yeah, good to be with you, Kerry. The markets are fascinating. I think the main thing is that this long economic recovery is now getting kind of tired. And we've been looking at the credit markets and the yield curve, which is the difference between the high-grade and low-grade bonds, is set up for a change that can certainly push off a tremendous stock correction, and it could precede the next economic contraction. Credit spreads, the difference between in the same position, being ready to change. And so the credit markets are beginning to tell us that the boom, and let's face it, Kerry, the expansion has, while long now, has been very weak expansion, I think, characteristic of a post-bubble world. So you've got that, but you've got the credit markets in the last little while acting as if there was a boom somewhere, and but the boom is in the financial markets, which we think can be that's quite risky, because if you're speculating in copper, for example, at some point in a bear market, there's a bid for copper, but for a lot of paper in the stock market and in the credit markets, and there's some fantastic paper invented in the credit markets, there's no bid for that once people realize it's really gone bad. So I think that in the last half of the year, we could recognize that the U.S. economy is slowing. This is also including the observation that this is, with the Trump administration, this is a change from the most anti-business administration to probably the most business administration in history in U.S. But all of this is in the markets. What we were writing in November, when you'd gone through the bad time when things could happen in October and then stabilized, and then the election was won and the markets exploded. So we were referring to that as rational exuberance, not a play on Greenspan. Comment of 1996. And then a few weeks ago, our technical work were showing upside exhaustions and sequential sells and, you know, getting excessive. So we took out rational and just called it an exuberant market and wondered how long it could go. So this then is what you've got now, is that the credit markets are beginning to suggest ending action in the stock market as well as ending action in the economy. Mm-hmm. And we're monitoring those very closely. They've been in a sort of similar to 2007 and in the first quarter of 2000. So there's, you know, we're watching for the excesses here. And over all of the history of the Federal Reserve or any other central bank, they may be able to push rates down, short rates down, and certainly in the last few years have been able to push long rates down to absolutely absurd levels. But they really do not, or at least let's put it this way, throughout the history, they've never shown any ability to change the action in the yield curve or in credit spreads when the cycle is about to turn. So I think this is going to be the same thing. No matter how intense they are, they're trying to turn things, it's not working. So you've had interest rates increasing since June. You had LIBOR, the 3 months, rising quite a bit. And you've had on long-dated treasuries, the worst from last July was the peak. And it showed a lot of technical excesses then. We then did use the term ending action on the bull market for long-dated treasuries that began in 1981. So it was a serious high, and then it's been followed by one of the worst sell-offs in decades. But again, going to last July, when we got the sell signal on the long treasuries, there was nothing showing on junk bonds. So, you know, JNK or HYG. So we figured they would keep going. Now, a few weeks ago, we started getting the excessive technical readings on HYG and JNK, which, as I said, is setting up for a major reversal. So the reason why you could have a major decline in bond prices with interest rates continuing to go up is that some would think in the past that would be due to a bulge of inflation coming along, CPI inflation. No, we don't think that. I think it's going to be post-bubble type of stuff whereby the debt taken on in the party, they suddenly discover that even a flat economy can't service it. And that would be both corporate debt, and then you have to look at tax revenues for into provinces or states or municipalities or federal government. So you have that problem. So we think a major bond bear started in treasuries and will continue, although we're looking for a rally out of here because we think the stock market's going to take a little rest here in the next month or so. So, but at any rate, a major bear market in bonds. And one of the other features of the post-bubble world, and we consider 2007 to be the top of the bubble, is that the real long interest rates go up.
Right.
And they have done in the past, the typical increase has been 12 percentage points, which is huge. But what it seems to be, Kerry, is that Mother Nature, after the public has, and governments have partied in the credit markets, it's Mother Nature's way of ending that, the abuse of credit markets.
Yeah.
Now, here's the other part that's interesting with that is that the real price of gold in the initial phase of a credit contraction has gone up as well, because most commodities, including crude oil, fall relative to gold. And so then profitability comes into the gold business, and the production, of course, goes up. So it's Mother Nature's way of reflating a disastrous credit market, where in these credit bubbles, you not only have a huge expansion of the normal instruments of credit, but you have a whole lot of new items they invented, you know, just derivatives and all kinds of wild-eyed things. So that will inevitably contract, and I think just as inevitably, the real price of gold will go up and production will increase, and that starts to flush up the global banking system. And all of this will happen despite what Keynesian central bankers think they can do or hope that they can do. I think it's going to be a terrific setback for the central banks, because we're in a world where popular uprisings are happening. In England, they've taken the next step to leaving the European community, Brexit. And, of course, in the United States, you've had the election with Trump, which is a major change. So the public, as part of this change, is looking at every institution, and particularly the ones that are intrusive or just messing about, and each one will be reformed or reduced or eliminated. Now, what has been one of the key institutions in funding government expansion? Central banks. And perhaps at one time they thought that a central bank was there to run the economy, but certainly in the last 30 years or so, that has been totally corrupted to funding yet another experiment in unlimited government. So the Fed has been providing unlimited funding for an experiment in unlimited government. And that experiment is in unlimited government is coming to an end. So I think the folks will be very critical of the Federal Reserve. And I see that yesterday took quite a step to at least doing an audit on that. But in the overall big picture, Kerry, very aggressive expansion of government over the last 20 years has been funded by perpetual bubbles, or the idea that you can have a perpetual series of bubbles. And I think that'll come to an end. So no matter how ambitious government bureaucracies have become, they still have to have the financing. And if you've got the Fed being choked out because of falling stock and bond prices, that then they won't be able to fund the state. So the next few years are going to be fascinating.
Yeah, so we're going to see major bond defaults, both in the U.S. and abroad. Is that the natural outcome?
Some of the lower grade bonds, junk bonds, you know, where they're always quoted as relative to par, like par is 100 and you got a bond trading at 90. I think some of these bonds are going to be down quoted in parts per million, like a gold property.
Air pollution.
Yeah. So no, they, when they get that bad, they just, there's no bid for them. No quote, nothing. They just go down into default. And there was a very nice study done by a bond dealer in New York and published in 1933. And it just showed just how badly, even at that one time, you know, investment grade corporates did do in that contraction. And as and mainly these disastrous bond markets are driven by the inability to service the debt. And then what you have also with this that helps the dollar, the senior currency, and just hypothesize that most of the debt on this bubble was underwritten in New York City. Even just say 60% or 65%. So then that's underwritten in U.S. dollars payable in New York, both the debt service and the redemption in dollars in New York. And previous post-bubble contractions, it was London and sterling. So this is where, it's not my imagination, this is the way it has worked. And so all of that debt written, due and payable in U.S. dollars, is a huge short position of the dollar. And Kerry, even if you go back to Gresham in the 1550s, Thomas Gresham, who was a great trader in that period, but he was also the financial agent in the money market in Antwerp for the British crown. So this is where he sent a number of letters to Burleigh, who was the Chancellor of the Exchequer, explaining that, yes, you can borrow money in Antwerp, but you have to pay it back in Dutch coinage, which was firming up the guilders. So yeah. He explained in a number of letters that you don't want to end up being in a position of having to pay debt from a weak currency to a strong currency. Yeah. And this is what the world is facing now, is because the money was available. You couldn't say no to any prospective borrower. Mm-hmm. And it all has to be repaid one way or another. And I'm glad I'm vertical and alert and watching this, because it's going to be fascinating.
Yeah. So, and a lot of the debt isn't even owned in the U.S. by the U.S. banks, right? They're intermediaries or the true lenders.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then you've got the, in 2006, it was the peak of the residential real estate bubble and all of that. Never, never type of financing, and not as big, but sort of equivalent has been in the car financing. Mm-hmm. And used car prices have been falling quite sharply in the last few months.
Yes.
And that's going to be a problem. But generally, I think just every facet of the credit markets is going to suffer the inability to service debt. And, one of the wise things that the Austrian economist von Mises came out with decades ago was that at the top of a boom, the banks don't have to call the loans. Mm. All they have to do is get a little nervous and stop making them.
Yeah.
And I think we're at the little nervous and they're beginning to slow down in granting loans. And that's the start. So you get everything working to suggest a major contraction is at hand. Let's put it this way, Kerry. It's also been earned because the recklessness of investors, that can be done voluntarily. Mm-hmm. But then you have the involuntary side where the central bankers have been reckless on the taxpayers' tab. I mean, this is astonishing. You've never, ever had central bankers being so aggressive. And what, of course, they've been pushing is an unsound theory that if they expand credit, you're going to instantly get a business expansion.
Yeah.
Well, that's not been the case. So what has not gone into plant and equipment has gone into financial speculation.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they just don't see it because in their mind, there's only one kind of inflation, and that's tangible asset inflation. They never really understand what inflation in financial assets is, like a stock bubble, in this case, a bond bubble, and they will collapse at some point.
Yeah, agreed. So precious metals, what's going to be here?
Well, what we look at is that you take the gold stocks and divide them by the bullion price. So we just use Huey and gold, and that peaked out in 2011, and it really didn't base until December 2015 going into 2016. And that, we concluded, was the end of the cyclical bear market for gold sector. And it was the beginning of a cyclical bull market. And then, of course, you got the big explosion up to May last year. And that pushed our technical indicators up to the point where we said, hey, this is going to suffer a significant correction, when it was even more significant than I thought possible. So now what we're looking for here is the same thing. You've got gold stocks divided by gold has been basing and improving. I think you can, and as I say, the real price of gold has advanced since the real serious low a year and a half ago, and it can continue to advance. So this is where you have the unusual things in a post-bubble world where the senior currency becomes chronically strong. So there's not a huge amount of money to be made out of riding gold in U.S. dollars. But if you're in a weaker European currency or somewhere else, you can make money on the bullion price. But where the money will be made and where you traditionally always have the leverage is in the gold mining stocks. So I think both investors and traders should be looking at gold mining stocks based upon the real price of gold going up relative to the cost of mining. And the cost of mining, of course, you can understand that with crude oil prices. And there's the cost of energy for the big trucks, and it's also the cost of blasting agents and all that sort of stuff. So in every post-bubble contraction, the real price of gold has gone up. And that's for like 20 years, and the bubble peaked in 2007. And the gold mining business has become the premier industry, and it just happens. And this then now, 2007 was the sixth great bubble in financial assets since the first one in 1720. And this will be the sixth post-bubble contraction, and within it, the gold stocks on the next cycle will be, well, the next cycle's already started. We figured that the bear cycle ended for the sector a year and a half ago, and now it can move up again. But you have to also be careful, because if this latter half of the year, if the big stock market goes down, so will the gold shares. So I think you have to have maybe a 2 or 3 month horizon on them, and they're acting reasonably well now. I think there's some money to be made in the sector, and we would watch for technical excesses the next set. The last one was in May a year ago. So one cannot sit there and say 20 years from now or 10 years from now or 5 years from now, it's all going to be higher. But what history tells us is that in a post-bubble contraction, which can last for about 20 years, the real price of gold will do well. And the interruptions to it, it's not one steady trend, is you got the business cycle, the usual four to five-year business cycle. And that whereby the gold sector will do well when the traditional and the orthodox side is not doing so well. So like the gold stocks for the longer term.
All right. Well, that sums it up pretty well. And the stocks, the metal, you think the metal's going to move, or is it just going to kind of meander?
Traders can trade it in U.S. dollars, but as I said, one of the other features of a post-bubble contraction is a firm U.S. Senior currency, and the senior currency is still the U.S. dollar. So no big estimates on where gold will go in U.S. dollars. But if you're in a lesser currency, you know, who knows how far it can go.
Yeah.
But the gold shares, when they move, they'll be fantastic. They will eventually become the premier sector. Now, there may be some high-tech sectors that somebody comes up with something new, but the one thing that can be analyzed is that in a post-bubble contraction, the gold shares do exceptionally well.
Yeah. All right. Well, Bob, it's always great to have you on. Just tell us where we find you on the internet.
Yeah, it's under institutionaladvisors.com, or actually just Bob Hoy. Just Google that, and it gets into everything. And we got to show the track record. We've got some compliments from people who know our research, and you can get in on a trial, and we'd welcome your interest.
All right. Hey, well, Bob, it's always great to have you. If you got any questions, comments on this interview with Bob or others, send me an email, kl@carrielutz.com, kl@carrielutz.com. Don't forget, the Twitter feed is @CarrieLutz. Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. Bob, we'll talk to you again real soon. Thanks so much for being on.
Good to be with you, and we'll look forward to the next one.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.